Cerruto, try it again. Fans on the feet, 6,000 in attendance. The payoff is flied into right field, going back at the warning track, at the wall. It's gone! Go ahead, three-run home run for the senior! Peter Cerruto has given the Indiana Hoosiers the lead!
Hello and welcome to Talking Hoosier Baseball. We are recording this on Wednesday, April 17th, 2024. I'm Carl James, joined by Chris Feeney and Cassidy Palmer. The Indiana University baseball team was staring another home series defeat straight in the eyes in the middle of the second inning on Saturday. Having been blown out on Friday by the Nittany Lions, the Nittany Lions had just hit Connor Foley hard, and they were up 8-0 in the middle of the second inning. On that game on Saturday, the Hoosiers came back in what was the biggest comeback since 2010, end up walking off the game. But it was really good to hear the voice of Chris Feeney leading the crowd. That crowd was absolutely yes. Awesome on Saturday.
Yes.
And then, you know, Sunday, while Penn State struck first, it wasn't for long. Indiana just absolutely dominated to take that final game and take the series. So things were looking pretty good. Then we got into last night, and you know, given the pitching situation over the weekend, having to use a guy like Drew Burr in extended innings, and he was awesome on Saturday. You know, that left a lot of the other pitching options out there. So they threw seven guys. It wasn't always pretty. There were a lot of three ball counts. There were a lot of free passes. But in the end, this group held them to five runs. The problem was Indiana hitters in three consecutive innings started first and second with nobody out and didn't manage to score hardly anything out of it. And IU ended up dropping that contest 5-4, which is particularly tough given the RPI and postseason situation that the team is looking at right now. There's still a path to a at-large berth, but that path gets tinier and tinier with every loss. And losing to a plus 100 RPI team at the BART is just not going to cut it when it comes to doing this. Then it makes it to where, okay, now you're looking at having to get multiple sweeps in conference play, which isn't going to be an easy thing to do. That's not something, I mean, this team has one sweep, and that's of Baylor, but we're not looking at three of the teams that Indiana's going to be facing are above them in the standings in the Big Ten, right now, and two of those series are on the road. So I'll now pass it on over to Cass. Cass, what are the stats telling us?
Yeah, thanks, Carl. Not so much a little bit what the stats are telling us, but really just a fun thing that grabbed my attention in that Saturday game. So Indiana's down 8-0 going into the bottom of the second. And, or wait, was it that game? Now I'm all kinds of, no, it was the third game. That's what it was. It's been a long day. But still, Hoosiers are down going into the bottom of the second, and you've got 4, 5, 6 due up. Cerny gets plunked. Mitchell and Wiggins both walk. And then you have Joey B hitting his first home run, a grand slam. In that process, Cerny saw one pitch and it hit him. Mitchell saw four pitches. They were all balls. Wiggins saw six pitches. Obviously, four of them were balls. Two of them were strikes looking. So those first three batters reached base, loaded up the bases, and did not lift the bat off their shoulder. And then the very first pitch that Joey sees, he sends it over the wall, grand slam. In that inning as a whole, there were 34 pitches seen. Hoosiers only swung at 10 pitches. Two of them went for home runs. One was a single. One was a hard line out. Five were foul balls. Just one was a swing and miss. Those guys were keyed in on the zone. They were, with large success, able to distinguish balls and strikes, and they scored five runs in the inning. That's when this offense is at its best. When they're able to draw these walks, when they're able to kind of key in on the zone, this is when they're best. I know that sounds obvious. Yeah, when you're not swinging and missing, you're hitting well. Yes. But that was just something that very much caught my attention, because even then, looking at that five-run second inning from the day before, it was honestly not too far off conceptually of looking through it. There was not a single swing and miss. There were a butt ton of foul balls, and there were two hits, a ground out, and a sac fly. There were no swings and misses. So that was just an interesting thing that piqued my attention as we were going, of like, wait, how long has it been since someone took a swing at anything? So I just thought that was fun, and I wanted to highlight it on here. So Chris, now that I've highlighted that fun series of at-bats, you've got some hardware to hand out.
Yeah, I mean, fun was definitely the word of the day. You know, I was talking to somebody about it Sunday. You know, when you go to a game and it ends up with a name, you know, it's one of those, right? It's one of those you wish you had the ticket stub for, and you save it, you throw it on your bookshelf. And to me, that's the 8-0 game. I haven't been to too many of those, and I've been at a lot of baseball games, whether it was in Queens or wherever it was. There's not too many 8-0 comebacks, and it was really special. And Carl mentioned how great the crowd was. I think it was huge that we came back early so quickly. It gave no one time to leave. You know, you didn't have time to be like, oh, we're down by a million, we're leaving. It was a beautiful day. It was a Saturday at the bar, which was prime weather, and we scored five runs in the second inning. So, you know, whether it was Pines, big double, I think it made it 8-3, a couple more runs after that. We didn't score again for innings. You know, Wiggins doesn't hit that two-run homer till the seventh. But that crowd stayed. It stayed loud. It stayed involved. It stayed active. It was really fun. Wiggins hits that two-run bomb. It's 8-7. They score again, right? It's 9-7. And we're thinking, oh, here we go, right? We fought all the way back for nothing. I mean, we had to deal with the review and the home run that wasn't and the whole bit. And just for Cerny to be able to have the redemption to tie the ball game is really special stuff, you know? And yeah, it's a lot of red belts to give out. And we're going to probably talk a little bit about green jackets on this episode too, because it was Masters weekend. And I'm telling you, there's something about this place on Masters weekend when it comes to walk-offs. And we added to the legacy this weekend. We really did. And Nick Mitchell gets his name in the books for taking the wild pitch. You know, you got to say who took it, right? You got to say who was that when the walk-off happened. So Nicky Mitchell gets in the books for the walk-off wild pitch. If I could give a red belt to Will Prokowski, I would. He did a hell of a job coming in late in that game, giving up the tying signal to Cerny and then throwing the wild pitch. But I don't think we do that. I think the pitching red belt's going to go to Drew Burr for his 4 1/3, his 8 strikeouts, his 70-some-odd pitches. I shouldn't think it was that many. Cass looked it up before we hit record. And just 3 hits. So Drew really stepped it up, coming in a situation that's rough, right? Your ace doesn't have it for the day, and some aces just don't have it sometimes, right? You know, I Jacob DeGrom sometimes didn't have it. From what I understand, Nolan Ryan sometimes didn't have it. But Connor just didn't have it, right? And it's 8-0, and Drew's coming in to try to hold down the fort. We've been outscored, what, 20-3 at that point in the series? And Carl mentioned it. We flipped that sucker. We flipped it, but without Drew Burr's 4 innings of holding it down, right, because having us come back, I don't think it happens. And I don't think I've been to one other one. I'm not going to lie. I think I was at one of the 8-0 Met comeback on the Braves. And that one happened to be fireworks night. So, again, nobody left because we were all staying for the fireworks show. So, you had a packed crowd, and we got to John Rocker. I had to look it up because I remembered something like that Met-wise. But, yeah, we were down 8-0. Piazza won it on a home, put us ahead in the 8th. So, you never know, though. But that's 30 years of games. I can remember 2. And it's only 2 because of what just happened on Saturday. So what a game. And Drew Burr gets the pitching red belt for his effort. For the offensive red belt, lots of choices. You know, I thought about Wiggins' home run. I did. Because we hadn't scored since the 2nd. But, I mean, if you get 7 RBIs in the game the next day, you got to get the red belt. So Joey B gets it. He had a 4-hit, 3-run scored, 7 RBI game. You know, again, that's real special. He went 4-for-5. Grand slam, solo bomb was the 2nd one, if I remember right. So, but still, 7 RBIs, what a day for him. So he gets to Alex Dickerson. For the defensive, I was almost going to go this way last week, but I am going to do it this week, and Jake Stadler's going to get it. I don't remember like a wow me play over the weekend, but the fact that Stadler has to catch all these innings now with Brock being down, it's not easy, right? We take it for granted with Pete Cerruto from last year. That wasn't the norm, right? I don't think it was. It was special. We used, like, you know, he's going to have to Cerruto that thing. Like, Cerruto has become a verb now. And it is, right? Because the guy caught a million freaking innings in a row. So I don't know how he did it. Jake weaseled through this, not weaseled, but managed his way through this series, right? With Friday not going well, with the beginning of Saturday not going well, and then to just flip the whole thing around. So I'm going to give the defensive red belt to Jake. So it's going to be Drew, Joey and Jake for our red belts. Now, again, I don't give out green jackets. I don't. I give out red belts. But I really got a really quick mention that we added another walk-off to the Masters weekend at the BART. It's really ridiculous. I remember a couple of years ago I looked it up because, like, I had realized a couple had happened already. I'm like, this can't be right. So I went all the way back. 2015, Logan Sowers, a walk-off single to beat Purdue. 2019, you had Drew Ashley, a walk-off single to beat, oh, Evansville. That's a good day for that, right, to remember that one. 2021, Colin Hopkins, a walk-off home run to beat Illinois. 2023, Morgan Colopy last year to beat Iowa. And now Nick Mitchell. again, I'm going to have to give it to Nick. I don't know who else we can give it to. You get a walk-off.
Well, right? Well, the other thing you want you consider for Nick Mitchell is that his impact on that game, just as an honorable mention thing for your defense, was that throw he made that didn't get anybody out, but he kept that guy at first base, and that kept that run off the board.
Well, so, then you know what? Then it's perfect to have to mention Mitchell, right? I mean, it really is then.
And now, see, I have to add in Cerny because he was – proving just enough of a distraction sprinting from first to second that it, I think it, I'm not ruling out that he wasn't in the peripheral for the pitcher. And then the catcher is then trying to throw it before he has it. And
it was amazing.
I want to give Cerny a shout out there too.
Yeah. I mean, all these guys' names getting in on this. It was a special, special day. And the Masters seems to be a special weekend at the BART. I hope we're home again. And that's the other thing. You're not even guaranteed to even be home.
Yeah.
But not only have we been home for this, and it's not like it's the golf has been up against us. Usually you get home, you can watch the end, right? John Rahm, easy win last year. Scotty Scheffler, easy win this year. It's not like they're walking it off. We do the walking off. And like anything we're here with Tiger, with Drew, Tiger won going away. So the guys who seem to win the year we walk off win easily. But we have to pull stuff out of our hat in the bottom of these innings and have a lot of fun, and I'll take it. Now, that's it for the awards. So we'll call that red belts and green jackets for this week. And I get to do that because I wanted to. So even with the series win, there are a lot of fans that are wondering, like, the pitching's been giving up a lot of runs, right? We know that, but we've been scoring it. We've been coming up and coming back up against it. Now, Carl, I know you've been looking into some of the runs being given up by the pitching staff. And why don't you explain a little bit to the listeners about that?
Yes. So what I really kind of want to talk about is just kind of, first of all, is echoing, you know, a lot of the things that we're hearing, but also providing some numbers in the background to kind of back that up. This era of college baseball is very different than it was 5 years ago. And there's a lot of things that are causing that. I think the biggest overall really is the major league situation and the professional draft. It's down to 20 rounds now. And as we've mentioned before, the number of affiliated programs is massively down. There's like, what are we looking at now? It's what, 5 per major league team now? So with AAA, AA, and then 3 different single A's. So there's 5 affiliated. But there were some of these, especially the larger programs, that might, they had like 8 teams that were affiliated before. So there's just a lot fewer professional baseball positions to go around now. And then you also add into that the pitching arm injuries that just keep stacking up. So the need for pitching in the professional ranks and the need for talented pitching has gone up. And that means that the talented pitchers are being taken in these 20 rounds of the draft, and it's only the best of the hitters. And then you throw in the pandemic and an extra year of eligibility, and Division I baseball is absolutely flooded with quality hitters. I can tell you from, you know, following this, you wouldn't see mid-major teams that had really decent hitters once you got, you know, past 5th in the order. And we're consistently looking at 8-hole, 9-hole hitters that are crushing multiple home runs in games now. This stuff is just nuts. But some of that is, and I'm there with Cass, and then a lot of times I'm like, yeah, okay, I keep hearing people say that, but what do the numbers tell us? Well, I came up with an exercise to determine how old both a hitting and pitching group are. And I'm comparing Indiana to all of the teams that Indiana has played in weekend series. So at least 3 games. So I'm not counting the tournament teams. I'm not counting midweeks. Just Penn State, Troy, Baylor, Belmont, Illinois, Butler, and Maryland. So, and of course, as I like to do, I like to put my co-hosts on the spot. So among all of those teams, including IU, which do you think is the oldest hitting group? And by oldest, this is how I've defined it. I've taken the 9 players with the most plate appearances, and I've added the number of years of Division I played, including this year. So, for example, you take Tyler Cerny, he would be 2 years because this is his 2nd year. So that would be 2, and you just add all those numbers up. So of those 9, take the top 9 plate appearances. Which team is the oldest?
Troy.
Very close.
I was going to guess Baylor.
No.
Because they had a lot of transfers.
Baylor is one of the youngest.
Oh.
I thought Troy, because I remember that they seemed like real smart hitters. They fouled off a million pitches. Mm-hmm. I don't think I saw a junior. Well, maybe a junior. I didn't see a sophomore, freshman on the board very many times.
Yeah.
I think one guy looked like he had like 3 kids. There's some older guys on Troy, I remember.
So it's Penn State is the oldest. Barely. No. They 1 year. One out of 9 players, it's 1 year difference between Penn State and Troy. They are by far the oldest, then followed by Illinois, then Belmont, then Maryland. Baylor and Butler are tied. They are all older than Indiana. Indiana is the youngest in the group, 21 combined years from the top 9 plate appearances. So
it doesn't surprise me, Carl. It really doesn't. A lot of these teams have had, and I've heard from, you know, several people who I trust hitting wise, you know, very their mind, their hitting mind, and the way their mind works. And another old guy, another older guy, another old guy. He keeps fouling them off. He keeps fouling them off. It really, it wasn't stopping that Troy weekend. I remember that.
Yeah.
It's just you learn, you get smarter, you get older, you got these super duper seniors. What you're saying makes a ton of sense.
Yeah, and I think it also, to some degree, and it's, you know, it's, you can't, it's not an excuse, but you look at yesterday when the Indiana hitting group had a lapse. They had a lapse, and it was, I mean, I'm, and it's not my opinion. Go watch coach's post game from last night. They went off of their plan. They were, to everything Cass was describing that happened on Sunday, they were letting fastballs go by down the middle of the plate, not swinging at the pitch that they should be because they were off of timing. And then again, I'm basing that on what coach said. It's a little hard for me to judge that as much when it's one of those things. That's actually something you actually get better if you're watching on video, provided the video is good.
that is a big requirement there.
Now, and again, but the point is, I think you kind of go from that perspective though, that Indiana's, the reason that Indiana's so young is because of how talented that group is. And the other thing is, that group, especially the juniors on the team, were playing every day from the beginning of their freshman year, and that may not be as much the case in some of the others, because IU obviously very solid offensive numbers overall, but you might also though explain that couple of head scratching times when the offense just didn't look good, and I think some of that may just go to what you said, Chris. It may just go to the experience and the, you know what? I'm not going to get, if you've been at this for 5 years, I'm not going to let the moment cause me to get off of my plan. I'm going to give a good at bat every single time. I also, just because I was interested, did the same exercise with the pitchers. So out of all those teams in age, where do you think Indiana ranks among the 9 pitchers with the most innings pitched for the year?
I'm going to go smack dab in the middle, whatever the middle of the group is.
I think we're a young group, but way, way on the young side.
By far the oldest.
Really?
Yes. That's why I'm bringing it up, because I was right there with you. I was not expecting that. But Indiana is by far 28 combined years.
Wow.
Now, you know, Ty Bothwell.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, when you add 14 for one guy. Well, I guess, yep. Yeah, that's like the grad transfers and stuff. I think I was just thinking more like our up-and-coming guys.
But I think part
of it. A lot of them seem young to me.
But I think a lot of it is just goes to how much work in the portal the staff did in both of the last 2 years.
Yeah.
Bringing in so many experienced innings because they knew that was the issue that they had. They needed to fill those innings. While they've done a better job, I'd say they haven't done a bad job. And then part of this is, you've got, hey, what, 4 sophomores are in this group. So it's 4 sophomores, 2 juniors, a senior, and 2 super seniors. And that's the thing, is you're not, out of all of these teams, when it comes to pitching, there are 3 super seniors. 2 of them are on IU's team.
Yeah.
Now you go to hitters. IU doesn't even have a senior. Yeah. I'm talking about a super senior. There's no seniors in the top 9.
Yeah.
While Troy alone has 5 super seniors. Sorry, 3. Has 3 super seniors.
A bunch of those guys look super old, man. I remember.
Penn State has 2. Baylor did not have any, but also Baylor, you know, wasn't hitting. Belmont has 1. Illinois has 1. Butler has 1. Maryland does not have any. But I think, again, that's one of those you're seeing more of. You tend to see more of the super senior hitters in the non-power programs because, I mean, it's saying that you're trying to build guys that are going to get drafted. But IU has, Ty Bothwell's story is very unique, so I don't think you can point to a pattern in that. But I think a lot of this other is just coming out of the how IU has used the portal and has really focused the portal in pitching. And it's not necessarily going to be the most talented guys. They're just because we know the most talented guys, once they're on the radar, they're going to get drafted.
Oh, yeah.
So, and the other thing is, if they're going to get drafted, they're going to go. Because as a hitter, you might be thinking, well, I got drafted in the 18th round. They're only going to give me $10,000 or $2,000 or whatever it is. Hey, you know what? I can go do what Philip Glasser did, go play a fifth year, really cement himself, and then get into a better position in the draft, in addition to doing accomplishing things in college. As a pitcher, you got to think, all I'm doing is risking an injury.
Yeah.
And it's much more so as a pitcher than as a position player, just because of these UCL tears. That's got to be in the back of everyone's mind. But yeah, I found that eye-opening. And again, I can't really speak one way or another as to what that means, but Butler has the youngest group in that. Maryland is the next oldest, and then Troy and Illinois are next. But it's like it's not even close. It's 3 years difference between IU and Maryland, and then 3 years difference between Maryland, Troy, and Illinois. So don't necessarily know what that means, but it was an interesting little statistical exercise. All right. But now there is another Big Ten series to play, and the Hoosiers are going to go on the road to Minneapolis. Cass, what can you tell us about the Gophers?
Yes, well, the Gophers are currently, well, they're currently playing a game right now. So bear that in mind with the next minute of information, but they're currently sitting at 13-16 on the year, including 2-2 at home. They really have not had the opportunity to play at home much, as I'll get into in a second. And in Big Ten play, they are 3-6. They currently sit about 147th in the RPI. And in Big Ten play, so far they've played at Iowa, hosted Illinois, and played at Michigan. And every single one of those series was one win, two losses, in a completely different way. So that's helpful for trying to analyze anything. Overall, so on the pitching side, there was a little bit of a shakeup last week and then into today's game as well. Their guy who had started the first couple of Fridays was then getting the start today. I don't know if maybe there was a slight injury and it's a one inning rehab start and he'll be back to the rotation this weekend, or if this is a legit start, I don't know, and we haven't gotten the projected starters yet. So I've kept him off of my list for now because he was starting tonight, but last Friday starter was Will Semb. He has an 8.49 ERA in 41 and a third innings of work. And while he has thrown 22 walks, he struck out 51 in comparison. So this is a guy who does strike out a lot of batters. At the same time, however, he's given up 7 home runs on the year. It's kind of a, he's in the zone. If you can hit it, you might be able to hit it pretty far. And he has a .287 batting average against so far this season. Their guy who went Saturday, Connor Wheatgreff, or Wigrefa, unsure. He's at a 3.4 ERA in 50 and a third innings of work. He's also one who has a big spread of he's issued 19 walks. He's struck out 46 batters. So again, this pitching staff can strike out in bunches. He has a 275 batting average against, but so far in the year, he has given up zero homers. So a little bit harder to hit it for extra bases from there. I'm not sure what Sunday will look like again. Last weekend seemed to be a bit of a staff day. But a couple of the other pitchers to look for are Justin Thorstenson. He has a 2.45 ERA in 25 and two-thirds innings pitched. His strikeout to walk rate is a bit more even at 20 walks to 23 Ks. So might be able to get a few free bases off of him. But his batting average against is just 227. And then the last one to really keep an eye out for is Tyler Hemish. He has a 2.7 ERA in 16 and two-thirds innings of work and a 179 batting average against. They've got a lot of guys in that kind of 15 to 16 innings of work range, and they've kind of been playing around with starters versus relievers. So that's kind of up in the air. But as a whole, the staff has a 5.07 ERA, 276 strikeouts so far in the year, and they've only given up 18 home runs as a whole. This staff is hard to hit home runs off of. On the batting side, they've got a couple of guys who are hitting above 300. You've got Weber Neals, who's hitting 321 with a 914 OPS, and you've got Josh Fitzgerald, who's hitting 310 with a 1044 OPS, and he's only got 16 Ks on the year. So he's one who's difficult to strike out. A couple of guys to watch out for power. Their batting average is a little lower, but lead the team in home runs are Ike Mazenga with 7 home runs so far, and Brady Council, who has 8 home runs. And Brady Council is one to watch for on the base paths as well. He has stolen 12 bases in 14 attempts. And in fact, as a whole, the team has stolen 30 bases on 36 attempts. So he alone is coming up on half of those stolen bases on his own. The team as a whole hits 265, and they have 38 home runs compared to the 18 home runs they've given up this year. These games are scheduled for 7 p.m. Eastern on Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on Saturday, and 2 p.m. Eastern on Sunday. I would not be horribly surprised to see that Friday game moved up because the forecast is just about freezing. Low of mid to low 30s on Friday night. So I would not be surprised to see that one bumped up into the daytime to try to play it as pleasant as 40s degree baseball can be. It's better than mid 30s. So that one could move. We'll see on that. I'd imagine Saturday and Sunday will stay about where they are. You're not going to get significantly warmer or colder at those times. But that's how the weekend is shaping up. Carl, you've got the Ball State preview.
Yes, which you think would be easy because I had the Ball State preview 2 weeks ago. Uh-huh. But the thing is, if you go back and try to find it, you'll see it's not there because I had to cut it all out because I gave you a preview of the 2023 Ball State team, which doesn't really help.
No.
So I'm going to actually now give you a preview of the 2024 Ball State team, which is going to be a much better thing. But this is, yeah, it, before you do your previews, it's important to not go back and, oh, I need to look at something about 2023, which is what I did. And then I forgot to switch it back. So, okay. but I am going to keep this brief because it is a midweek. But it is at Victory Field in Indianapolis. The Hoosiers and Cardinals will be matching up at the at a really nice field. Honestly, if you can, get out there. It's going to be a 6 p.m. On Tuesday. That's going to be a fun one. There will be no video coverage of this game because it is obviously on a neutral field that that just isn't outfitted for that. But the place itself is gorgeous and is a great place to watch a baseball game.
And Austin Render has a phenomenal radio call, and and you'll be able to picture it for those of you who can't go.
So offensively, I'm really just going to talk about two guys. They're top two OPS guys who are both over 1,000. That's Mike Hallquist, who's hitting .358 with a .419 on base percentage. He also has 13 home runs on the year. Now, I would say home runs aren't going to be quite as common at the at Victory Field. It's a ballpark that is both big and plays big, but we've seen a few. Ryan Feinman could tell you about that. So, Hunter Dobson is their other big bopper, 1.055 ERA, a tad under 300 for his batting average, but he's got 12 bombs on the year. So those are their big boppers. From a pitching perspective, I just took a look at their game last week. I think it's a decent comparison because it's also it was also a Big Ten competition. It was against Purdue. But they rolled out a ton of pitchers. They had an open from Logan Schulfer, and he did pretty well. He allowed three base runners, all by walk, but that's all he gave up. No runs, no hits in two innings of work. So he gave them a solid opening, but their next few guys got absolutely shelled. Their best performance after that was Lucas Letzinger, who had 2.1 innings of work, struck out two, gave up one run and three hits. He also hit a batter. But they, in that game total, walked 11 and hit three Boilermaker batters. So it was not a great game for them, and they ended up getting run ruled in that game, 13-3. So I would expect probably to see those two better performing arms, which would be the opener, Schulfer, and then Letzinger. Letzinger on the year has a 1.5 whip and a 5.14 ERA. Schulfer has a 1.91 whip and a 6.26 ERA. So I would expect those two may take a decent chunk of the innings at Victory Field on Tuesday. All right. When we're talking about playing baseball on a professional field, now we will turn this over to Chris for what information he might have on the alumni.
All right. Thanks, Carl. We got our info, again, always from at Pro Bowl Hoosiers on Twitter. I had a couple of things listed, but Philip Glasser decided he wanted to get snuck on the list again. The last time we were recording, he hit a home run as I was going through everything, so we were able to sneak him in there. And then today, he had a four-hit, four RBI performance for the High A Nationals. They've already started a Promote Glasser campaign on Twitter. I believe it's hashtag Promote Glasser. So feel free to join in on that. Let's get him moved up in the ranks a little bit. Matt Lloyd hit his first home run for the AA Cardinals. And they're really feeling Matty Lloyd. They're using him in the promos. They're putting him in, like, the starting lineup thing that they throw on Twitter. So he's definitely rubbing them the right way, as he always did with us. You know, we're playing Minnesota this weekend. And, of course, you can't play Minnesota without thinking about Matt Lloyd's walk-off bomb. And a very similar series, right? Losing Friday bad, going down early on Saturday. Big comeback Saturday. That's the Matt Lloyd game. You know, I told you games have names. So that was the Matt Lloyd home run game. So playing in Minnesota is very fitting. Another one that I really was very happy to see, Caleb Barriger, who, if you don't know, he was a very good Sunday pitcher for us. He came over, I believe, as a transfer. He pitched 2 years somewhere else first. I don't exactly know where it was. but he came over to us, and for the 2 years he pitched for us, he was a starter. He was really, really good. He was a weekend guy, Sunday guy. Caleb Barger, the dream is not over. He has decided to keep playing. He pitched major leagues for the Giants already, off and on for 2 years, and now he signed with the Lancaster Stormers in the Independent League so that he can work his way back. So I was really happy to see that Caleb Barger is still throwing his hat in the ring to chase that dream. Again, he already made the majors, but to get back, you know what I mean? And then probably the most impressive performance that one of our alumni was able to put together. For those of you who don't know, on Marathon Day in Boston, Fenway, they play games at like 11 a.m. at Fenway Park. And, you know, the marathon goes through and everybody goes to Fenway and the crowd's drinking and having fun. And the Red Sox always win, except this year. Because Timmy Herron comes in a nothing-nothing game after five, throws two shutout innings in the sixth and the seventh. He had three Ks, no hits. The Guardians went on to score six runs and won 6-0, and Herron got the W. So that was a pretty big deal in what I would assume was a pretty raucous environment if you know Marathon Day at Fenway. So good for Timmy for taking care of that. That was pretty much the highlights as far as our Pro Bowl Hoosiers. And like Carl said, if you can get to the Vic, you're getting to – Matt Gorski plays for the Indianapolis Indians. Maybe you'll run into him. Paul Skeens, number one pick. He might be at the game. You never know. I mean, that is his home ballpark for now. I would think he'd be with the Pirates pretty soon, but he is there for now. Carl, what did you have for us as far as post-game media sessions, just recently or the other ones you've been at for the week?
Yeah, I think I'm just going to give the big picture, that at least that what we're getting from Coach, which is that I think overall he is very pleased with the development of the pitching staff. The bulk of the run issues in the last week, came from the top two guys, and it was just they just didn't have their stuff, and it wasn't that they were, not hitting the zone. It was their velocities were down. They've been leaning on these guys really hard, and he has no real concerns long term, with either of these guys, from what he's told us. And then the point is the rest of the staff, the bulk of the rest of the staff, not everyone, but the bulk of the rest of the staff is making huge strides. As you recognized, Drew Burr, what a phenomenal performance he had on Saturday. But we've had a couple of good outings from Jacob Vogel. Pretty much all the freshmen that threw yesterday did quite well. Ryan Kraft looked awesome last night. So we're seeing a lot of pieces being added from the pitching, and the ability to have a winning weekend. It would have been hard to have imagined a winning weekend if we would have said what the lines from Bothwell and Foley were. That would have been hard to have imagined that being a winning weekend, but it was. So a lot of that is on the rest of the pitching staff. And as we all know, overall, I think it's very positive on what's going on with the offense. Taylor's in a bit of a slump right now, but that happens to guys. He has no concerns about Taylor. Taylor's going to, he'll get out of this and he'll get back into the superstar we know him to be offensively. And he had some concerns obviously last night, and maybe it was just overstated from a baseball development perspective. It was just very painful last night because that's a game the team needed to win. They really needed that game. And for the offensive problems to hit right then when they needed to get a couple more runs to get a W out of that, it was frustrating. And that was one of the more frustrating pieces we heard directly from Coach. Sometimes you'll see that on the faces of the players when they're heading out of the locker room, or as this case, we were hearing, bats hitting balls because they were taking batting practice after the game last night. You kind of get those signs, and then how long it takes him to come out afterwards. But he addressed it verbally and directly, And obviously he takes a lot of ownership for the hitting. So I think that's where a lot of that comes in. But at the same time, he made the same discussions that he's like, the development and growth of the pitching in the last month, he is very pleased with. And he's also complimentary of the work specifically that Dustin Glant, pitching coach, has done in that. So that's what they're talking about when it comes to developing these guys. We haven't gotten into a lot of discussion about, what does the team need to do for postseason? Those we haven't really gotten into those conversations yet. The team is really just kind of focusing on one series at a time, and then obviously one game at a time from there. All right. Well, when we're talking about series, we talk about our pick'ems. So we're into another week of Big Ten pick'em. I know I'm the running the conversation, but I will still go ahead and say, you know what, I will go ahead and pull up the current rankings, even though they look very bad for one Carl James. Because it was last week the very entertaining Chris versus the field, given that the four of us, except for Chris, all chose the exact same set of teams. But Chris bucked the trend and he gained a series on all of us, because he correctly picked Northwestern to upset Maryland, which they did. And obviously I said I went through it with a methodology last week, but I was there with, I say that you can go back and listen. I didn't make it my official pick, but I was like, I would not be surprised if Nebraska's kryptonite of Rutgers gets to them, and boy, they did. The one area where Chris did not do as well was in picking Iowa when the rest of us picked Ohio State. Iowa's just reeling,
Terrible.
and
Let me down. They let me down.
yeah, well, and they moved Brecht to Sunday.
Yeah, I saw
They're
that.
like moving their rotation all over the place. It's crazy. So right now that means, but what else is it interesting though is that we're all separated by a series now. So Josh has a series lead on Zach. Zach has a series lead on Cass. Cass has a series lead on Chris, and Chris now has a series lead on me, as
Let's go.
I'm still underwater at 9 and 10. So I need a good week to not be better than a coin flip, which is to not be worse than a coin flip, which is where I'm at right now. So we've got Ohio State at Michigan. So we've got a rivalry series there. And that's two teams near the top of the standings. That's a big one for multiple reasons. We've got Penn State and Michigan State. So two teams more towards the lower end of the standings there. The number one team in the league gets Northwestern at home. So I would think they would be favored there. Rutgers traveling to Iowa. So there it is. It's like, can Rutgers continue to play well? And what is going on with Iowa? And then I think a very intriguing series, Maryland traveling to Nebraska. So this is going to be a very interesting week ahead here for the Pick'ems. So this week, we will start. How about we start at the top and work our way down? So I've got the picks for Josh and Zach. So let me pull those up here. So Josh's picks. He is picking one road team, and that's Penn State. So he's got Penn State to defeat Michigan State. The rest are the home teams. He's got Michigan beating Ohio State, Illinois beating Northwestern, Iowa beating Rutgers, and Nebraska beating Maryland. Now I will go to Zach. All right, Zach is taking Michigan over Ohio State. He's got Penn State beating Michigan State. He's got Illinois over Northwestern, Iowa over Rutgers, and Nebraska over Maryland. Those are all the same as, yeah, he's, I, They keep picking the same. So
they have 1 week. Did it again.
They've had 1 week where they were different. All right, Cass, you're next.
Okay, well, I am going different from them a couple of spots. I am going with Ohio State at Michigan, but I think it's close. I kept going back. That was my one of back and forth and back and forth. I do agree with them on Penn State over Michigan State. I agree with them on Illinois over Northwestern. I disagree with them. I think Rutgers is going to beat Iowa. Again, I think it'll probably be close, but Iowa just hasn't looked like the Iowa we expected, and Rutgers has looked solid. So I'm going with Rutgers there, and then I am going with Nebraska at home. I wasn't going to pick a Maryland team that lost to Northwestern. It could be that was the kick in the butt they needed to get going, but I'm still not making that pick over Nebraska.
Chris, what do you got?
All right. As we started our trend last week, we're going to talk about the Hoosier ticket project real quick before you get my picks that probably won't be worth any tickets. 400 plus individual donors into the Hoosier ticket project. They've had over 1,000 individual tickets go out and to help people out with. Okay. And that's over all kinds of sports. You can donate tickets or request tickets for women's basketball, men's basketball, football, IU baseball, anything. Run the gamut. The Hoosier Ticket Project can help you out or can accept your donation if you want to send somebody to a ball game. Right now, it's pretty much just baseball, right? So if you want to send fans to the Rutgers game, maybe they'll have a great time like the people who went this weekend did. I mean, you had a huge comeback on Saturday. You had a great game on Sunday. Hopefully, not too many of the ticket donation people or request people went on Friday. That was a rough one. But Saturday and Sunday, classic games. They would have had a ton of fun. And for the Rutgers series, you got the baseball card giveaway on Sunday. And on Saturday, some kind of weird boneless chicken wing eating contest that we're hearing Brent Tazzoni might be participating in. So if you really want to get to the BART, use the Hoosier Ticket Project to either donate or request tickets if it's something that you need. As far as my Big Ten picks, I'm going to go Michigan, Michigan State, Illinois, Iowa, and then Nebraska, and hopefully move up another leg. I moved up from the bottom one. Maybe this week I'll move up one more. What do you got, Carl? What are your picks?
Okay. I'm going to take Michigan at home. I've got Penn State over Michigan State. I have no faith in Michigan State at this point. I think Illinois is going to do fine against Northwestern. I'm going to say Rutgers over Iowa. I think Iowa's really reeling. But I am going to be the one to pick Maryland to have the stunner on the road and take down Nebraska. I think they finally got their kick in the pants and they're going to get themselves together and have a good series in Nebraska in Lincoln.
That would help us with Nebraska being so high up there. You know, so I just looking at it, Nebraska 6-3.
Yeah,
and shockingly, we're only 2 games back in the loss column of the whole thing.
Yes.
I felt like we were a lot further down on the ladder, but we're only 2 losses back. Everyone's got at least 2 losses.
Usually you have a team that's just running away with things, and this is a league that's just beating up on each other right now.
So. I was going to say Big Ten teams are cannibalizing each other. The Big Ten is cannibalizing itself.
Yeah.
But it's good. That helps us. That helps us seed-wise. That helps us to maybe win the regular season. It wouldn't help you in an at-large situation, I guess, because then the 2 teams don't run away, which is what everyone thought us and Iowa were going to do. Yeah. So much for that plan.
Yeah.
But, I see we're only 2 back. So let the Brad – Carl, I'm rooting for you. I want to switch my pick. I can't. I already announced it. But I wouldn't mind losing that one. Go for it, Carl.
Yeah. All right. Well, those are our picks. So we've got them all in the books, and those will be up on iubase.com. If you go to iubase.com in the menu section, there is a B1G pick'em. It's also going to be one of the once we get it up, it's always usually Thursday or Friday. It's in just the list of articles that are there. But if you click on the B1G pick'em, you can see each of the week's progressions of picks. So that will be up on the site. All right. Well, thank you for listening to this episode of Talking Hoosier Baseball. For more on Indiana University baseball, hit up iubase.com. For Chris Feeney and Cassidy Palmer, I'm Carl James. See you at the BART. Or this week at the Vic. So.
Yeah.